These are the Target Files. Journey back with us between the 1970s and 1990s on a TARDIS nostalgia trip as we look back at the novelizations and audiobook releases of classic Doctor Who stories. Accessing Gallifreyan Archive. Subject, Time Lord, known as the Doctor. Target File. Doctor Who and the Day of the Daleks. Author, Terence Dix. Mysterious humans from 22nd century Earth time jump back into the 20th century so as to assassinate a high-ranking diplomat on whom the peace of the world depends. Doctor Who, Joe Grant, and the Brigadier are soon called in to investigate. Joe is accidentally transported forward to the 22nd century. The Doctor follows, eventually to be captured by his oldest and deadliest enemy, the Daleks. Having submitted the Doctor to the fearful mind analysis machine, the Daleks plan a time jump attack on Earth in the 20th century.
Hi, this is Alex in Exeter.
Hello, this is Mike from Swansea.
This week we're going to discuss The Day of the Daleks by Terence Dix. And we're also going to discuss the audiobook read by Richard Franklin and Dalek voices done by Nick Briggs.
So, your initial thoughts on this Terence Dix novelisation of the TV story, our third Doctor TV story?
Well, it's an interesting one. It's got lots of great action and it's got great sort of comic notes of the Doctor and Joe, and it has a good pacey story, but I just feel that it's getting a bit like you can predict how a Terence Dix book's going to go. It's going to have action, it's going to have this, it's going to have a conclusion. So I think they're getting a bit stylistically stale, to be honest.
Yes, we've listened to quite a few now, with just prevalent within the target range because Terence wrote so many.
Oh, definitely. He wrote probably about half of them. I think he's worked out a formulaic way of writing them, and they seem to stay like that, unfortunately.
Critics have said that, no, he didn't do it for the money, but I think to a certain extent he did, and I actually saw him speak in Aberystwyth, South Wales, 2 years ago, and he more or less admitted that in the Q&A at a Five Doctors screening.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, because I expect these were quite quick to turn out and you probably got paid quite a good amount. But I'm not saying that he's not a good writer, because I do like the way the story's padded out with, you know, good sort of action and good events. But I just think you listen to it and you think, well, this is going to come next. You sort of know how Terence writes.
Yes, I think that's where the A to B criticism of him comes in now, doesn't it? That's been mentioned quite a few times down the years.
Oh, definitely. There is definitely unfortunate painting by numbers. A happens, B has to happen. And I think they are good stories, but I just like them to be a bit more different.
Yes, you know, an interesting one. This, around this time, the Target had released the first three Frederick Muller 1960s published books, and they were releasing two on the same day in this earlier period. This book apparently released in March 1974, along with Doctor Who and the Cave Monsters by Malcolm Hulk. What do you think if you'd been a child in those days, Al? What would you have made? Would you have been excited at that prospect of two being out on the same day?
Yeah, probably, because you had a lot, we get excited when you get lots of Doctor Who stuff these days, but I think that would have been a good thing, but completely different writers, and you're going to get two different stories that angles there, because I don't think Malcolm Hulk sort of painted by numbers, I don't think.
No, seemed to be a little bit more in depth, really, didn't he? You know, but this is sort of towards the earlier part of Terence's adaptations of these stories, but you can already see that painting by numbers coming in, Al.
Almost definitely. You can see by the way the chapters are laid out just by their titles, he's got story art worked out in his head from the beginning. The sort of, this must happen here, this must happen here, and then by the end, everybody happily be ever after, really. But I don't think, maybe there's a little bit of not happy ever after with this book.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly people, if we look at the modern series, people have noticed with the Stephen Moffat series, there's perhaps a lack of the joie de vivre that you might have had with Russell T Davies scripts.
Almost definitely. Russell T Davies scripts had always had a bit of more, you know, whiz and bang about them. They had a bit more fun, where Stephen's can be quite serious and can be quite dark. You know, like the whole double part with, you know, Unit and the Cygons was really dark in some bit.
That's possibly something that's missing from a few other writers in the target range. Terence's sort of joy at putting this on the page.
I think so, Mike, because we're in the, you know, Doctor Who third period, but it was very sort of, because of John Pertwee, it was sort of larger than life, and, you know, as they call it the James Bond era, I don't know, because you had gadgets, you had cars, and it is larger than life, so I think that comes over in the book.
Yes, there was so much change at this time, of course, the BBC and Doctor Who going into colour for 1970. Those early few years of colour TV, as you said, John Pertwee, a very Bond-esque take on the role.
Really, I think, yeah, that would have made a difference, it being from, though the black and white story was really great as well, I think having that bit in colour would sort of add things to it. I know it was difficult doing the colour thing back then, but it does look rather good in colour, this.
It's very enjoyable, Al, the TV story and the book and the audiobook. I do love the concept of time travel in any story, really. I mean, my favourite movies as a child were Back to the Future, and the sort of parallels here in that you get the idea of a paradox.
Oh yeah, most definitely. You get the whole, you know, if you travel in time, that will affect what happened, and that's why, you know, you have the big bit at the end of the book to stop something from happening.
But actually very prescient of another 1980s film, The Terminator, isn't it, in terms of people being sent back in time to sort of alter history.
Oh, yeah, I do love that film. It was sort of that whole, you know, feeling against technology in a way, which is quite surprising, including, you know, the amount of gadgets and the sort of things what the John Pertwee Doctor have. You have that, you know, this technology will basically affect the future.
In the actual book itself, we actually get the first chapter, which didn't appear on television.
I thought that was the case, because I listened to it and then thought, I didn't see that. I thought that was the case.
Yes, it represents Earth as if it has been taken over by the Daleks, and you get the introduction of the rebellious characters, don't you? And you get the introduction of the Ogrons.
Oh yeah, definitely. And they come in straight at the beginning, and I think they're more fleshed out in the book, so it was a bit weird on TV, I think.
Yes, were they more of a menace for you in the books? Is that what you mean by fleshed out?
Yeah, I think there's, well, at the beginning that they feel a bit more menacing. Well, when you get that bit on the tricycles midway through, this becomes a bit comical again.
Yeah, you know, Terence could do that. He could go from serious to slapstick within a number of sentences, couldn't he?
Most definitely. He's very good at that. There are some quite funny bits in this, but, you know, the whole bit when Joe and the Doctor are at the house, and the whole bit about the Stilton and wine drinking stuff is quite fun.
Yes, I think that's actually altered from the TV version, isn't it? You know, they have a bit more of a bare-bones meal in this novelisation compared to what they do on the TV version.
I thought so, because I've watched it recently. I thought they have like a ginormous lavish meal, don't they, on the actual TV episodes.
But there's an amusing moment, isn't there? It sort of represents the whole class system of the military in terms of who the food ends up with, you know, who it starts with and who it goes through to.
It starts with Benton, doesn't it, and ends up with Mike Yates, who's the captain, so it would, you know, and sort of tricks him out. I think that's a very sort of comical bit about the social class at the time.
Absolutely, that very sort of old stuffy military version which we see so often through these early unit years in Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And I can never remember, is Benton as yokel in the TV thing as he was in the audiobook, or was that the way Michael was reading him?
No, I think we'll move on to Richard Franklin's reading in a bit, Al, but yeah. I think he does enhance it really there, doesn't he? He does elaborate upon it.
He does. It's a great read. We'll get onto that later. But I just wondered, is Benton as yokel actually in TV? I can't remember him being.
I don't think so. There's an air about him, but actually, I feel if you meet John Levine in person, he comes over...
John Levine is very posh in real life.
But he can go down to that, you see videos and things he makes, social media videos, and he can represent the accent from, I think, Salisbury he was born in originally.
Ah, that's where it's from. I did wonder about. What did you think of the female characters in this book?
Moni? Moni is the Resistance leader, isn't she?
Yeah.
Very strong, I thought. You know, about time. We've had a few books now, we have mentioned it. The female characters have been written rather meekly in the recent books we've reviewed, but I thought Moni stood up very well, very assertive, very focused on the goal of re-engaging the Earth back from the Daleks. How did you feel about her, Al?
I really like the female characters in this book. I think Moni does very well. She's sort of very feisty and wants to get in them, you know, and make sure the Daleks get killed eventually. She wants her planet to be back to how it used to be, I think. So I think she's very strong, she's very out there, which is very good for that period.
Yes, and the other sort of major character there is Boaz.
Oh yeah, the sort of typical sort of, you know, strong man sort of character. It's sort of from that time period. I think all the characters are very good in this book, really.
Yes, I think, you know, we started off with a bit of criticism of Terence Dix, but we have to give him the plus points as well. And one is that he does flesh out these characters a lot from the TV version. He actually gives, without giving the big spoiler away at the end, he actually gives Boaz more of a role in the ultimate outcome than he gets in the TV version.
Definitely. I know we've been saying a bit against Terence, but his actual writing is fantastic when it comes to character development.
It does really eventually reel you in. Sorry, I have the paperback version here, Al. I'm looking at it now to see, you know, the page count is 171, so that's fairly sort of mid towards high range for Target.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised, because there is quite a lot going on in this book.
Absolutely, Alan. We also get within the book a number of illustrations we haven't discussed for a while. There are some fabulous ones representing the scenes here. The pencil, the line drawings. You know, there's pictures of Joe and the Doctor being, on page 59, listeners, Joe and the Doctor being surrounded by the Resistance fighters.
Well, that's they're always good, those line drawings.
John Pertwee in profile from the left-hand side, Joe Grant. John's hair looks a little less bouffant. He may have been pleased about that if he saw this version, I think.
I think so. No, I know he was never a fan of that hairstyle, I don't think.
Yes, and I need to add in Al, who made these line drawings. I'll just check.
Yeah, there was some good artwork for the Target periods.
A certain explosion at the end, I won't say what happens, but there's a wonderful picture here of...
Oh, that's a good one, man. I think I do remember those.
You get Pertwee in his right-hand side profile, sort of juxtaposed at the back of the shot, and then further away in the shot you have the Brigadier Mike Yates standing watching an explosion with Joe Grant there as well, and it's just so eerily written. You know, they've gone for this with a pencil and grading the rocks on the ground, and then you get the very comic book effect of black smoke on black and white.
Very nice.
It looks very good, looks very good. I'm just gonna try and find that quickly, Al, if I can.
Yeah, find out who did them. They are very nice. I do remember them. If it's saying his name, it must be him, I suppose.
Ah, yes. Further up the page, I'm sorry, folks, it does say illustrations Chris Achilleos. Illustrations, plural, so he did them all. Wonderful job, Chris. Wonderful job on those.
They are lovely. I do remember those.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is Who's News on the 30th of November. Thing we need to mention first is that BBC have announced the time for the Christmas episode of Doctor Who, the only episode of Doctor Who this year. Of course, it's called The Return of Doctor Mysterio. It's going to be on BBC One at 5:45 on Christmas evening, which is fine for children, but might be a little bit early for us adults who are still recovering from a large Christmas lunch. If you're struggling to find a good Christmas present for a Doctor Who fan, then why not get them the 2017 Andrew Skillington calendar of all his Target books? Each month has a different one and will keep your Doctor Who fan very interested. Well, Big Finish have announced two rather fun things for next year. One is Unit Assembly out in May. It's basically going to be all the new Unit characters like Kate Stewart, Petra Osgood, and with them we have the old parts unit, such people as Joe Grant, Mike Yates, and Benton. They are going to be struggling against the Silurians and the Sea Devils, so it should be great fun. Also, Don't Turn Out the Lights next year. Classic Doctors with New Monsters, Volume 2, has just announced that Tom Baker will be facing the Vasta Narada.
The cover's up here now, Al.
Okie dokie.
Okay, originally published with a Chris Achilleos cover. Back in the mid-70s. We have John Pertwee in a black and white pencil drawing. Very prominent features. Not so much of a Buffon again.
It's quite nice. It's quite simple.
But then we have an orange and black surrounding of Daleks and an Ogron. Ogron, let me know, folks. How do you pronounce it?
Oh, I think it's Ogron. Well, I never know either.
And we have the Pertwee Doctor Who black logo and purple writing and the Day of the Daleks, Terence Dix in black writing. Yeah, it's certainly one I do like.
I do like that. That is nice.
And then we move on to a hardcover edition published in 1981 with an Andrew Skillitter cover. The Doctor Who Peter Davison logo in yellow.
Yeah.
With purple surrounding. And the Day of the Daleks in black, Terence Dix in black. The Daleks appearing from the time machine with a red background, some grey Daleks in front of it. Two Ogrons not looking particularly menacing on the cover. One has a gun, but they just look like they're waiting for a bus to me.
No, I don't think I like that because of the colour system and that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, the blend's not there and they don't look too menacing. And as we've said, it can always do with the Daleks.
Oh, definitely. When it's, you know, it's Day of the Daleks. You can have a Dalek on the cover.
But to give Andrew Skillitter his due, he came back in 1987 for another paperback edition. Similar again, red Doctor Who writing with the Peter Davison logo this time.
And
the Day of the Daleks in black writing again. He's changed the blend, a white background. It's the same image as before, but he's changed the colour scheme. It's orange for the time machine with a black ring around it.
I don't know on that.
The Ogrons look slightly more menacing, possibly not too PC, looking a bit like the black and white minstrels.
Oh no.
With a slight pink on the ears there, you know, something that was, very racist back in the day, folks, in the 1960s in the UK. And we have grey Daleks coming out of the time tunnel.
Well, that's wrong, because I thought it was meant to be black and gold.
Yes, possibly, you know, possibly it's my vision with the old internet trick of the dress that was online a while back, Al. Maybe I'm seeing it as a different colour.
Maybe. I think the Chris Achilleos is the best cover, I think.
But there is one to go.
Another one.
Our good old friend from the exhibition, Alistair Pearson, re-released in 1991 the McCoy logo. The Day of the Daleks, based on a Doctor Who adventure first broadcast in 1972. Greenish background, greenish-grey Dalek, some sort of clock face behind it. Just with the clock hands, really, the clock symbols for each hour, without the numbers themselves. And John Pertwee's head floating precariously behind it. So, possibly not Alice's best work, not my favourite of his, but we did have the final reprint so far. In 2011, they've gone back to the Andrew Skillitter cover, but they have given it the lovely colour scheme with the sort of cream background, Doctor Who Pertwee McGann-esque logo in gold, and the Day of the Daleks in red, Terence Dix in red, more of a red tint to the Daleks and the Ogron, and John Pertwee prominently pencilled in at the front. I think that's probably my favourite of all the ones, the 2011 reprint, Al.
That is nice, but I think I like the Chris Achilleos still. It's quite simple and nice. It says what you're getting, I think.
Absolutely, I would agree with that, Al. So, all in all, another good one. Achilleos wins out the original one for me, I think.
I think so, same here. We also need to discuss the rather good audiobook that's just been released, read by Richard Franklin, and Daleks done by the great Nick Briggs. Mike, what did you think of it?
Very enjoyable, Al. Very enjoyable. I think Richard reads it very well. He seems to take the voices quite well. I know you had an issue with Mr. Sergeant Benton you mentioned earlier. We'll talk about that in a moment as I finish giving my thoughts. He did the female voices okay. He got the right sort of level of authority and assertiveness for Moni. Really sort of ramped up the Reginald Stiles character, the sort of the diplomat, isn't he? He really gave him that sort of old-fashioned British, British is best mentality.
Oh, yes.
So what did you make of it, Al?
He thought Richard Franklin gave a really good reading. He's quite quiet in some places in the reading, but he's sort of well-measured. The female voices are really good. Sort of quite good sort of differentiation between, you know, sort of Joe's voice and Moni's voice. So yeah, it was a nice balance. I would have a niggle about the Sergeant Benton voice, because it sounded very sort of yokel and sort of didn't give over the sort of, you know, Benton being quite clever in some of the episodes. I always thought he sort of wasn't a sort of yokel who was just a, you know, a person in an army, basically. So overall, I think it has a really good sound effect. It's got a good bits in it, and I think Nick Briggs is always great as the Daleks, and it's sort of quite good menace. So I thought it was really good.
Yes, as you mentioned, sound effects, Al, we have been a little concerned lately that some of the other releases, the soundscape can be a little invasive on the story, but this one seemed to blend it very well.
Yeah, I would agree. Some of the ones we've done before, you know, it takes it over. I thought there was just a nice balance between, you know, big events having the right sort of sounds and, you know, having Daleks, you know, turned up to the max really worked. So when they're sort of getting annoyed, it's really good. So I think it was just well balanced.
For some reason, I accepted Nick Briggs more in this classic series story than I did in the Daleks, the original David Whittaker Daleks book we reviewed recently. I felt he blended better for some reason in these ones. I suppose by this stage in the Doctor Who story, in terms of meeting the Daleks, they are at their maniacal best, aren't they, already? Whereas they're a little bit more measured when you first meet them on Skaro in the first Dalek story.
Definitely. They sort of are the manic sort of people we know and love these days. And I love the fact they go sort of potty when they know the Doctor's there. He really got that sort of manic madness right, Nick does.
Just a little take on his Pertwee. We have mentioned Katie Manning doing John Pertwee before. Do you think he perhaps goes a little bit deep at times? Really gives that to John Pertwee sometimes. I felt he was perhaps a little too deep.
There was bits where it was just about right. It was a bit too deep, a bit too gravelly. We need Tin to Lord redo the third Doctor books. He does it brilliantly, apparently, now.
Ah, yes, a brilliant voice artist.
His John Pertwee is what he's now doing for Big Finish. It's brilliant, apparently.
In all, a thoroughly enjoyable audiobook.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Really enjoyable. And it was a good listen, so it's well worth getting from anywhere, like Audible, Amazon. I think it's been out for about a week now, so it's well worth getting.
So, shall we move to our overall thoughts on the novelisation and the audiobook, Al? You go first, mate.
Well, I enjoyed it. I thought the book was well laid out, but as I've been saying earlier, I think Terence Dix is a good writer. He gets over emotion and character depth very well. But I think because we've read a lot of the Terence Dix books now, you can see where he's going through the sort of system of writing, like, you know, you have to have a beginning, the middle and the end, and he knows how to put it all together, so that slightly annoyed me. Audiobook wise, I really liked it. I thought Richard Franklin's performance was very, very good. So I'd probably give the book a 6 and the audiobook probably about an 8.5.
A bit of a discrepancy there are between the two, but I would agree on most of your points there. Very enjoyable, definitely a page turner. Possibly sometimes he does put a little bit too much humour in, takes you out of some of the more serious elements of the story. I mean, I've mentioned that I've loved the idea of time travel and paradoxes, which is central to this story and its solution in films. Audiobook, very enjoyable. Richard does a great job. The soundscape is fantastic again. So I would go for a 7.5 for the book and an 8 out of 10 for the audiobook.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I just didn't really enjoy the books in some bit. I thought, because I could see what was coming at a mile away, so that's probably what annoyed me there.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough.
Next time on the Target Files, we will be discussing the book The Three Doctors, written by Terence Dix, and the audiobook read by Katie Manning.
Doctor Who Target Files, Day of the Daleks Review, featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. I Am the Doctor, composed by Murray Gold. Versions of this podcast, arranged by Ruling Terror 42. Newsround opening and closing themes, performed by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and by John Baker. No copyright infringement intended on any of the music used in this podcast. Doctor Who Target Files Day of the Daleks Review was recorded in Swansea, South Wales and Exeter, Devon, England during November 2016.